Coming up, the off-season is officially over and the new season is upon us. The PGA Tour tees off this week in Napa and we're looking ahead to the most anticipated storylines. Plus, we're joined by the newest champion on the LPGA Tour. Ali Ewing stops by fresh off her third career win. It is a Super Tuesday here on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Well, how about this? We start this morning with a Tiger sighting. This is video of Tiger Woods taking some swings on the range at Liberty National this morning, according to the president and CEO of the TGR Foundation. Tiger Woods and Sam Burns put on a clinic at the Nexus Cup, an amateur charity event benefiting Tiger's foundation. As we welcome you into our Golf Today studios, great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Anna Jackson alongside the always delightful Eamon Lynch. And what a great way to start the day. We've got Tiger out there swinging on the range over at Liberty National. Haven't seen him since the Open. No matter what it is, it's just good to see him out there.
It is. And the week where we're starting the new PGA Tour season, what gets the juices flowing more than the prospect of Tiger Woods out there? You know, presumably we'll see him with Charlie at the PNC Championship back in Orlando mid-December, but there are 9 PGA Tour events and the Hero World Challenge before then. I wonder if we're going to see him play.
Yeah, and this is quite a prestigious amateur event. They get treated to all sorts of things. I know previous prizes have included spots at the Hero World Challenge, Pro-Am golf experiences at Tiger Jam and Rolex watches. It's quite a nice little start to the week for them.
And it shows you the power of Tiger Woods, because last night he had Scottie Scheffler beside him on the stage there doing a Q&A, and Scottie was the one wearing the green jacket. Of course, Tiger owns 5 of those himself. But the guys will come out and support Tiger Woods, even if it is their off-season for an event like this.
Yes, so if we get any more Tiger sightings in coming up today or the rest of the week, you will be the first to know. But hey, we are starting off a new PGA Tour season this week. Believe it or not, the off-season is done. And it seemed just like yesterday when Rory McIlroy staged an epic comeback at the Tour Championship to catch and surpass Scottie Scheffler for his third FedEx Cup title. Rory started the week 6 shots behind Scottie and was able to beat the Texan by 1 stroke, wrapping up a pretty eventful PGA Tour season. So, it's only been a couple of weeks, but here are a few things that happened in the golfing world during that 2-week PGA Tour off-season. You've got Scottie Scheffler, who won the 2022 PGA Tour Player of the Year. Shane Lowry just on Sunday won over at Wentworth. The President's Cup captains' picks were announced for both teams. On the women's side, Gabby Lopez and Ali Ewing, each winning their third LPGA Tour title in back-to-back weeks. And Eamon continued to stay off the golf course. I think that is a good thing for everyone. But how about in the world of sport away from golf? Because a lot has happened as well. The NFL season's kicked off. 3 top 10 college football teams lost in week 2. Serena Williams played in her final Grand Slam of her career. Albert Pujols hit home run number 697, surpassing Alex Rodriguez for 4th of all time. I beat my husband in the inaugural Jackson Cornhole Championship. Big moment in our household. And Damon Hack lost his club's tennis finals, the beef light. But hey, kudos for getting in the finals in the first place. Go on, D Hack. Well, that brings us to this week. The Tour kicks off its new season at the Fortinet Championship at Silverado Resort and Spa in Napa, California. It'll be the final time the Tour features a full portion of events that offers FedEx Cup points as the Tour transitions away from a wraparound season in 2024. So it feels like it is a good time for a regular season preview. And to do that, I'm very pleased to welcome in the third member of our team this afternoon, Paige McKenzie. You'll be with us throughout today's show. So let's get to it. Most anticipated storyline, Paige, of the upcoming season.
You know, you mentioned it. There's a lot that's happened in this offseason. It just feels like yesterday that we watched Rory McIlroy win the FedEx Cup. So it was only a couple weeks ago. But I am looking forward to watching him play next season and more specifically at the Masters. We watched him hole out that final bunker shot at the Masters last year where he celebrated in style and talked about being the happiest or most excited he's been on the golf course in a very long time. Fast forward to what has inspired him through the remainder of the season, and I cannot wait to see him back at Augusta trying to complete the career Grand Slam.
It feels like next season could just be the season. That is always one of the most anticipated storylines, but the way that he has been playing, especially coming off the end of last season, Oh my gosh, wouldn't it just be great? I think there's so much to dive into with the upcoming season, especially coming off what we've just had of PGA Tour versus LIV. But I genuinely am very fascinated to see how these new enhancements that are going to be made, that have been made by the PGA Tour schedule in response to LIV, and how that is all going to unfold. You know, will we have those desired effects? We've got those top 20 players in PIP, who separately is very fascinating how that will all unfold. But they are guaranteed to be playing in the same field at least 20 times next season. So will we have the big guys going head-to-head more regularly on a Sunday? We saw it at the FedEx Cup. We saw it at Wentworth a little bit with Shane Lowry and Rory. It does make for such brilliant golf. How privy as well will we be to that top 20 PIP system? Will we get to see in every week the PIP standings? Will it be a monthly thing? Will we not know at all? And at the end of the season, will we just see who gets part of that $100 million prize fund? It's very different. It's a PGA Tour that we've never seen before, or perhaps we may not notice the differences at all. I'm just a bit interested to see how the dynamic unfolds.
It would be nice if PIP was proved to be as transparent as the new official World Golf Rankings are, which to me are the most fascinating and probably underplayed element of the season that's coming up, because we've gone into a new system now where it's calculated in a very different manner. It takes out all of the inherent bias that was in the old system, where tours could apply a certain minimum number of points to the winner of each of their events if it didn't otherwise meet that threshold based on the quality of the field. And you're going to see a lot of belly aching from a lot of different tours around the world that are accustomed to essentially being artificially inflated. We're already seeing it a lot from voices over in Europe over the last few weeks. I mean, Shane Lowry won 38 points as the first place finisher in the BMW PGA Championship at the weekend. 2 years ago, Tyrrell Hatton won 60 points for that. Now, on the flip side of that, Billy Horschel last year won 36 points for that. So it tends to move around, but there's definitely going to be much more clarity and a lack of kind of parochial bias in the world rankings as we move forward. There's not going to be a thumb on the scale that artificially inflates any tour, and that has a knock-on effect on a lot of different things. People who qualify for the Masters, the whole LIV narrative will be impacted by this as well, as players rise and fall, because the new rankings are based not just on how you play, but who you play against.
Yeah, what do you think, Paige? Because it does feel like the landscape of the professional game, and particularly the PGA Tour, will certainly be feeling a little bit different this season.
Well, I feel like we're just in a place where the earth is shifting. And there is a little bit of instability in knowing what's going to happen moving forward, especially with the LIV narrative. I don't anticipate that the world rankings. I think the discussion is still going to be going back to whether the LIV players will be receiving it at any point in moving forward. I don't know if the average viewer is going to notice much of a difference in the world ranking or in the PIP, to be honest, Anna. I think when we look at it, most of these players are playing all of the big events. Where I think we're going to notice it the most is a player like Rory McIlroy, who only teed it up 16 times this year, now will have to be obligated to play 20 times. With him spearheading that movement and these new kind of elevated events and PIP guaranteeing that those top players will be playing in them, I think it's exciting for the viewer. So if anything, you know, I'm very much looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, also interesting to see if anyone can actually play themselves into PIP. Scottie Scheffler, a perfect example, probably wouldn't have been inside that top 20 at the start of last season, and now he's world number one. Okay, well, speaking of newest stars, Paige McKenzie, the newest star you think to break out of the PGA Tour this upcoming season?
Okay, this is borderline new star. I'm gonna admit that this might not qualify under some people's criteria, but I'm gonna go with Sung Jae-im. And really, my criteria is more of a breakout star. Yes, Sung Jae's been around a while, and he certainly has had a resume that would dictate that he may have a breakout type of year that we saw from a Scottie Scheffler like last year. Sung Jae-im won the Korn Ferry Tour Player of the Year in 2018, became Rookie of the Year on the PGA Tour in 2019, and has continued to improve in his status and in stature on the PGA Tour, finishing in the top 20 on the FedEx Cup points list every single year, the 4 years he's performed on the PGA Tour. And that includes just a few weeks ago, where he finished runner-up to Rory in the season-ending FedEx Cup. And it's one of those where I felt like he really was flying under the radar. And when you look at the growth that he's had in his game and where he is, this could be poised for a really breakout season. When you just look at his last five events, even he was runner-up three times in his last five events to end the PGA Tour season. Then went very much, I believe, under the radar. So he might be somebody to keep an eye on as we enter into this new season.
Yeah, you're right, Paige. He's been around the block for a couple of years, but in terms of a breakout star, I think it's a very valid point. He's always there, and you feel like it's very hard not to support Sung Jae-in because he puts in the grind, and it's going to have to pay off at some point. Okay, well, I'm very excited to see how Tom Kim takes over the PGA Tour, and if he can next season. He was such a breakout star right at the end of this season with that win at the Wyndham. Absolutely clutch. His opening hole with that quadruple bogey 8. I mean, you wouldn't have even looked twice at Tom Kim, but that final round 9 under 61, a 5-stroke victory, punching instant membership onto the PGA Tour, making him eligible for the FedEx Cup playoffs, but ultimately he finished 35th. But it's not just how he won and how he got it done, but also his personality. He's just such a shining star. I've heard Trevor Immelman talk about him and the role that he will hopefully be playing in the international team at the President's Cup next week. He's obviously in the team, but he said he's just a ball of energy. He's going to be so good to have in that locker room, that team, and really keeping kind of energy high. And that's exactly what those internationals need, because it's going to be a tough journey for them, probably at Quail Hollow. But Tom Kim, he could be such a star, Eamon.
I think Paige and I are accustomed to sitting here while Damon rides the Tom Kim pony across that finish line every show we do, because he bets on him every single week.
So I guess you're another convert.
I mean, those are two really solid picks. I look at a guy who's just come off a great rookie year, Sahith Theegala, with five top 10 finishes on his rookie year, made it all the way to the FedEx Cup playoffs. He finished, you know, tied second at the Travelers. He was tied third in Phoenix. He did both of them in pretty dramatic fashion. And to me, there's a little echo of the early days of Arnold Palmer about Theegala in terms of the way he plays the game. He draws fans in just with the excitement, the aggression, the risk-taking. Whenever he loses in dramatic fashion. And at some point, he's going to start winning in dramatic fashion. And the reason I think this might set up to be a really good year for him in the second year, he made 32 starts on the PGA Tour in his rookie year. He didn't take many weeks off. So there aren't going to be very many courses he's going to see next year for the first time, if any. And that kind of institutional knowledge that he's going to bring into his second season, to me, sets him up as a guy that I would look just to have a real kind of breakout year and build on what was already a pretty darn successful rookie year.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And you add to it the fact that he's had such an accomplished resume up to this point. He was such a standout in collegiate golf. This isn't a new name to those that follow kind of the up-and-coming players. And I would also like to add, you mentioned that he loses in dramatic fashion. He also loses in a way that gains fans. And I think when you go back to Waste Management, which was really his first opportunity to win a PGA Tour event and didn't get it done, there was such a warm embrace from the fans, not only on site, but through the screen when they saw who kind of Sahith was as a person and as a player. So I look forward to watching him play as well. If he continues this great play, no doubt he's going to be a popular player on the PGA Tour as well.
Yeah, he'll be making his name known in American golf for a long time to come. All right, Paige, so from the newest player to the best player, who do you think will be making their mark as the PGA Tour's best player this season?
You know, every year we go through this and we pick a player who we think we're going to, you know, ride that horse through the end of the season. And I've picked Justin Thomas, I think, a couple of times in the last 2 or 3 years. And as much as I want to believe in him again this year, I'm going to change my horse and I'm going to go with John Rahm this season. And a lot of it has to do with, yes, it wasn't his most sparkling season on the PGA Tour, but there was a lot of great things that he did. He was the best in his career off of the tee, number one on the PGA Tour in strokes gained off of the tee. He gained, get this, I looked at his driving distance, which he was always a great driver of the golf ball, but you average over the last 5 years, he averaged 307 yards off of the tee. He was up 11 and a half yards on that average just last season. So if he continues to drive the ball well, and you add to the fact that last season was his second best putting year of his career, typically that combination pays off. He struggled a little bit chipping around the greens, but I also know he's a member at Silverleaf here in Scottsdale, and they have a great practice area. So I'm sure this offseason he's going to be zeroing in on his one and only weakness that was pretty glaring this last season, but I look forward to him coming up and performing the way that we all know that he can with these two added really great things to lean on, both his driving and his putting.
And it's a sign of just how high the bar is that John Rahm has held to, that a guy who won this year out there on tour is considered in some ways to have a slightly disappointing year, or didn't quite live up to the prospects that we had thought, given what he did in the major championships last year. But for my choice for best player of the year, I'm not exactly going out on a limb here. I'm taking Rory McIlroy.
And shock.
It is a big shock. I mean, he hasn't won in 2 weeks, you know. It's been a very long time. He's slumping again. He's a great between seasons as well. You know, he's obviously played well at the weekend at Wentworth. And we're going to see him again this week, actually, at the Marco Simone course, the Ryder Cup venue, during the Italian Open. And then in 2 weeks, we'll see him play with his father, the Dunhill Links in St. Andrews. We're not going to see him back in the United States until he defends his CJ Cup title. He won that last year in Vegas. He's going to defend it at Congaree in October. But when you look at a guy who put together one of the finest scoring averages last season that we've seen in the history of the PGA Tour, he's won 8 times in the last 3 years. He's putting himself constantly in contention every week. And he said at Wentworth last week that he thinks he's playing the best golf of his life. Mm-hmm. And if Rory McIlroy thinks he's playing the best golf of his life, that ought to be worrisome for other guys.
Yeah, so that this is the kind of golf that he's used to play. I mean, you just look at his results last season, 10 top 10s, 3 wins. OK, a heartbreaking third place finish at the Open, but an encouraging runner-up finish at the Masters. But I think for Rory McIlroy as well, it's not just about the numbers and the stats. It's about what is focusing him and also what is fueling him at the moment. And he has clearly got some points to prove at the moment. He's been the spokesperson for the PGA Tour in terms of LIV Golf and how he's felt about that with the players defecting to the rival tour. And he feels like, I think he is at the forefront of that, and he's flying the PGA Tour flag and the DP World Tour flag with a lot of pride, wants to elevate golf to the next level and get the professional game to be the best that it can be. And he knows how important he is to making that happen. And he's not letting any of these LIV guys get one over on him at all, Eamon.
He's not, and you saw it inspire other guys as well. I mean, John Rahm's been somewhat outspoken on that. He fired himself up on Sunday. Shane Lowry, who was pretty tart in his comments earlier in the week by Shane's normally affable standards, and he said that inspired him towards the end of the tournament as well. So a lot of the guys who are kind of motivated by this, it could easily become a distraction for others. If it's your fuel, great. If it's your kryptonite, it's slightly problematic. But hopefully for these guys, it'll be less of an issue over the course of the coming months, at least over the winter, if things quiet down a little bit.
You know, he is playing inspired golf, and you really don't have to take our word for it or your guys' word for it as it relates to what his potential may be for next season. All you have to do is look at what the odds makers are saying. I think if you follow the stock market, you say, where's the smart money going? Where do the hedge funds put it? Where do the venture capitalists put it? Well, in this case, where do the odds makers put it? And for Rory McIlroy, he is at the top of the list for what they think is coming for Rory McIlroy. So I would just be paying attention to that. It's an early predictor of what may be to come for Rory McIlroy. The house rarely gets it wrong, you guys.
We all know never to bet against the bookies.
Nope.
While the PGA Tour gets its new season underway this week, the LPGA Tour is entering the final stretch of its 2022 season, and the latest winner on tour, Ali Ewing, will join us right after the break.
Well, what a week it was for Ali Ewing at the Kroger Queen City Championship. Let's catch up with her on her final round, the par 3 14th. Her tee shot, Eamon.
This is when you start to think it might just be your day. Nestles it up there, inside of 20 feet.
And she needed that. It was becoming a bit of a head-to-head down the final stretch. That would move her to 20 under, giving her the solo lead. Ewing now on 15, her third, Eamon. Not high. Oh, well, she recovered perfectly from her previous shot down that fairway.
And would convert that for birdie, bringing her to 21 under par.
She certainly would. So now it's the par 4, 16th, her second. A very nice approach here after just sort of missing the fairway there.
Sets it up for yet another birdie. And 22 under par.
So that would give her the solo lead. It was just a brilliant way to finish the week. Now on 18, her third, putting from off the green.
Needing to get up and down for her third LPGA Tour victory. Nestles that one up there, inside a couple of feet.
And that was enough to give herself a very comfortable little par putt and the win. And she would make it both final round 6 under 66 to win the tournament, to make it 3 consecutive seasons with wins on the LPGA. For someone who admittedly has struggled with her game a little bit this year, It was just a magnificent finish as we grow a little bit closer to the CME Group Tour Championship, which propels her inside that top 60 bubble. And she was surprised by her husband, Charlie, with a champagne shower, who flew into Cincinnati to support his wife. So a lovely, lovely family moment there. Well, just take a look at this, because since 2020, Ali is trailing only world number one Jin-Young Ko and Nelly Korda in total wins. She now has won in each of the last three seasons, joining only Jin-Young Ko in accomplishing that feat. So what a streak it is so far for Ewing. And with that, I'm very pleased to welcome in the winner herself. Ali, congratulations. It's so good to see you. Tell us, what have the last few days been like this for you? Because I'm sure earlier in the season, you weren't sure if a win was going to happen this year.
No, absolutely not. I've had some struggles with the putter this year, but I've stuck with it, stuck with the game plan, and fortunately was able to get back in the winner's circle. I've been hitting it great this week. So in this entire year, I've hit it great. So I was carrying that confidence with me, but it was certainly great to start to see the flat stick finally work for me. And I'm just ecstatic to be back in this position.
Ali, you said on Sunday that you struggled with nerves all day long, which might surprise some people who just saw you on that list trailing only Jin-Young Ko and Nelly Korda for wins over the last couple of years. Can you explain how you got to that point where the nerves, was it just specific to the circumstances that day or because of what's been going on this season?
I think it's a little bit of both. Obviously, I feel confident in myself as a player, but have yet to been able to put four rounds together this year. And seeing myself do that was just overcoming some nerves, overcoming some obstacles, and just persevering through this year to be able to get back into that winner's circle. So it was a lot of fun to finally see putts go in, like I said. But overall, it's a pretty cool list that you just showed with Jin-Young and Nelly ahead of me, and to be a winner three consecutive years is really cool.
At what point in the season, Ali, did you sort of figure out that the putter was really the area that was letting you down? And what did you go about to kind of change that process? I know I've seen that you've brought in the use of a metronome to help with your rhythm and slightly shortening that backswing. What was the process to turning it around? Because it certainly was not letting you down last week at the Kroger.
Absolutely. The last couple months have really just kind of, it's been a persistence, a patience game. But a few weeks ago, before the Canadian Open, my coach finally noticed something in my stroke that really pinpointed the issue. And that was that my stroke had just gotten really long. The tempo had gotten a little slow. So the use of metronome and blast golf, we've really just tried to balance out the stroke. And that timing really just gave me the freedom. And I was able to see the lines, see the break, and have great tempo that led to a lot of putts going in.
It had been quite some time, Ali, since your last top 10 finish on tour. And when you've got the putting issues going on as well, how tough is it to persevere and try to see the long game when you're kind of in the weeds with stuff like that?
Yeah, it's a big patience game. And I've always been a process-oriented person. And if I just stick to my game plan, don't try to change a lot, hopefully the perseverance and the patience, just really pays off in the end. And it did. And it took a lot of hard work, a lot of, talking with my short game coach and Tim Yelverton to pinpoint the issue. But not only that, Vijay Trolio just kept my long game sharp and driving it great and being a great ball striker this year. It's a part of my game that I've always trusted. And, it obviously hung in till the end of the golf tournament. And it's hung with me all year, but finally the putter started working and it got hot at the right time.
It certainly did. And a huge additional factor of that win, Ali, is propelling you inside that top 60 bubble in the race of the CME Globe. Because once you get to the CME Globe Tour Championship, then anybody can win that event. There's no staggered start system. You all kind of start from zero and you have the opportunity to walk away with the biggest prize in women's golf. So now not have to stress about that bubble. You're kind of well inside the top 30 now. How much of a pressure does that take off your shoulders for the rest of the season?
Yeah, it definitely took off some pressure. Anybody who competes on the LPGA wants to play the season ending event, the CME Championship. And being on the outside looking in was really tough, knowing, how I felt and how much expectation that I had for myself as a player. And Just knowing that a good week would propel me into that, not even a win. I started to see the good form coming in Canada, didn't put it all together, but I had a feeling that I could, you know, start playing really solid to finish off the year. And a win certainly was exceeded some expectation, but I'm certainly thrilled, certainly excited, and really excited to finish off the year with the last few events before CME, and hopefully move myself even closer into a good spot and play CME well.
How do your goals shift now, Ali, both in terms of this year and even looking forward over the next couple of seasons? You've had several top 10 finishes in major championships. Is that the area you look to next in terms of your results, or are you more granular in terms of the goals you set yourself?
Absolutely. I feel like I can compete at the highest level, and a major championship is a goal that I'd love to hit. But I know that if I take care of things on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, hopefully that I will see myself in contention at a major championship. I've been there before, haven't closed it out. But to see myself coming into good form, getting a win this week, certainly brings about a lot of excitement for next year's majors. And to hopefully be in that spot and contend for a major in the next closing stretch, for sure.
And just finally, Ali, sort of looking at the journey that you've been on, sort of bursting onto the international scene back in 2019 when you were a late sub for an injured Stacey Lewis in the Solheim, to then go on and win in 2020, 21, and now 2022. How would you sort of sum up this very, it's been a pretty quick success story, but it took a while to get there. How would you describe that journey?
Yeah, it was a slow journey, but a lot of people behind me obviously just kept pushing and pouring into me my abilities and how they knew that I was going to get there. A lot of that is just having that great support system. But bursting into the Solheim Cup on 2019 for unforeseen circumstances with Stacey was a huge breakout in my career, a confidence boost, and then getting that first win in 2020. Just kind of really solidified me, because it's hard to win on the LPGA. It's hard to win on any major tour. So getting that first win was big. And, you know, hopefully in years to come, I can see a lot of success as well.
Well, Ali, congratulations. Enjoy this win. I know you've worked so hard to get to this point. So best of luck for the rest of the season. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys, for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, let's take a look at the current race to the CME Globe. The top 10 remains unchanged after last week, but Ali Ewing moved all the way up to 30th from outside that top 60 bubble to get into the CME Group Tour Championship, which will be held in November. It's been a long, bleak 16 days since the last PGA Tour season concluded with Rory McIlroy's win at Eastlake. But on the bright side, we only have to wait 2 days until the next season gets underway. We'll check in with the rookie class debuting in California. And the LPGA Tour is blowing out 73 candles today, commemorating the meeting that began the formation of the LPGA Tour. Karen Stupples will be here to talk about its great history and what the future should look like. And the PGA Cup is taking place this week in England. We'll talk to Susie Whaley, the US team captain, hoping to reverse a losing trend. Golf Today continues now.
Golf Today.
Welcome back into Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch next to Anna Jackson. And the PGA Tour season is kicking off for 2022-2023 this week with a Fortinet Championship. Max Homa is returning to Napa, California as the defending champion. He grabbed his third PGA Tour win here a year ago and headlines a field this week that includes plenty of the Tour's newest and freshest faces. A lot of veterans in this field as well. Five of the top 50 players in the official World Golf Ranking, winner of the last seven editions of this event, four members of the International President's Cup team, and Ricky Fowler and Jason Day trying to kickstart their careers. They're in the field for the first time in over a decade. We're happy now to welcome in Kira K. Dixon, who is out at Silverado Resort and Spa. Kira, you spoke to some of the many rookies who are trying to make their mark on the PGA Tour this season. What can you tell us?
Yeah, well, the rookies out here really have that air of excitement, the first day of school jitters. As we were pulling rookies over for interviews, there's always a member of their team nearby that would rib them a bit and say, hey, you're big time now that you're doing Golf Channel interviews. So I'm really happy that that earns them that big time distinction. But all of them have such different journeys to getting here, Eamon. Some of them have never played in a PGA Tour event. Some of them have played up to 25 events. But something they all had in common, this rookie class, is they had to arrive here early over the weekend to go through some orientation, and they certainly all have plenty of anticipation and excitement for the week ahead.
It's really special because I've been dreaming this moment like since I was really young. So to be playing this tournament as a official member, it's something else. Like, it's, yeah, I mean, I didn't think about that much yesterday, but like you mentioned it right now, it's really special. But you know, like I said, I really trying to play to win this week, so yeah, just trying to enjoy it and looking forward to this week. Yeah,
the emotions have changed from last week to this week. Last week was relief and this week's just excitement. You know, it's just really cool to be out here. You know, I've played some exemptions and had some starts on the PGA Tour, but you know, to finally be like, feel like I belong is pretty cool and just excited to get started.
It's pretty awesome, pretty surreal. You know, we were just playing the Korn Ferry Tour a week ago, so we had our, you know, week off of an off season, and it just hits you very quick. But no, it's exciting for not only me but the rest of the rookies out here to come to the Fortinet Championship and have a chance to play against the best in the world right away. And all of us feel pretty confident in our games and ready to roll. So I'm very excited, and it's pretty cool to be on the PGA Tour.
Well, Ben Griffin, who you heard there at the end of the sound, I actually met him back in June at a U.S. Open qualifier in Maryland. And when I saw him this morning, he was like, Kira, I've come a long way since that U.S. Open qualifier. But Ben is just one example of a story of having come a long way just to get here. He actually quit playing professional golf or pursuing his dreams towards professional golf back during COVID. He became a mortgage loan officer instead. And he said, you know, that didn't last very long because his place is here in professional golf. But during that time, he was able to meet people that were able to help and sponsor him to get back towards his dream and to reignite his love for the game of golf. It's all worked out. He secured his status here via the 25, and that story is sure to play out for many other rookies in the field with plenty of dreams coming true here this week at the Fortinet Championship.
Yeah, it is incredible to see some of the stories of how these people have got onto the PGA Tour. Kira, thank you so much. The first of many reports for you coming this season. We are looking forward to it. Well, let's take a look at some of the changes that we will see over the coming season. First announced at the Tour Championship, some of the changes that will affect not only the rookies but all members this season. Those aren't the only changes. So you've got the 2024 season will move away from the wraparound season and begin in January, meaning that this year will be the last time we see FedEx Cup points distributed in the fall. And then some of the changes as of the fall in 2023, 50 players who qualify for the 2023 BMW Championship expected to play in a series of high money limited field international events. Players who miss the FedEx Cup playoffs will play events for status and priority in 2024. You've also got the return of Q School for the first time since 2012, and the schedule reverts, don't forget, to that calendar year format for 2024. So, in celebration of the last full series that we will see of the PGA Tour to offer FedEx Cup points, we want to bring back in Paige McKenzie back in to discuss some of our favourite full series moments in the last 9 years. Paige, what comes to mind?
For me, one tournament stands out above the rest, and that's the Zozo Championship. It's only been played 3 times. You mentioned that fall series has been around for a while. But when you look back at who has won those 3 events, it's pretty incredible to see the list of those 3 winners. The first being Tiger Woods. This tournament was, of course, intended to be played in Japan. And so Tiger Woods won his 82nd PGA Tour event there. And then Hideki Matsuyama also won it the year that, because of COVID, it got moved to California, and you have a Californian in Patrick Cantlay that went ahead and won that as well. So 3 really quality winners, and all of them very timely, right? And to have Hideki winning in Japan, have Cantlay winning in California, and again, just high-quality winners for this particular event that's taken place in the fall.
Yeah, you always get some pretty impressive crowds out there at the Zozo. I mean, highlighted by Tiger Woods capturing that 82nd win. So it's always, it's always a fascinating event to watch the Zozo. I mean, when I think of the full series, I have to cast my mind back to 2019, the full season of the 2020 season. And I will say two words, Brendan Todd. I mean, this was just one of the most compelling stories you will ever get in the game of golf. Lost his card in 2016, missed 37 cuts in 41 starts between 2016 and 2018. To be honest, he was so far gone that he was on the verge of quitting the game and buying a fast food franchise. He overcame full swing yips, fell right outside of the top 2,000 in the official world golf rankings, and then the unthinkable happened. He broke through again on the PGA Tour at the Bermuda. Not only did he do it once, but he did it twice, Eamonn and Paige. He went back to back and did it again at the Mayakoba. And he also almost did it as a hat trick, came fourth at the following week at the RSM. And since then, you know, he just hasn't really looked back. 2022 season, he qualified for the FedEx Cup playoffs for the third consecutive season, his fifth time in his career. These are the stories that the full season has generated. And I remember covering those events, three or four years ago. And it was just such a great story. It just doesn't get much better than that, Eamonn. I know you have quite the passion for the full series as well.
I mean, I was struck by Paige picking up on the Zozo, because that really, to me, is the reservoir of the deep stories that are in the fall. Obviously, you've got the fairy tale stories of the Brendan Todds, but this is a game that's built around the biggest stars. And typically they go on vacation in the fall. They've got a pretty intense run up until the FedEx Cup playoffs. Then the European Race to Dubai kicks off. So they've underserved the fall series over the years. So I personally would struggle to think of a fall series memory that really jumps out at me, because it always seems to me a point in the calendar that lacks a little bit of identity. And to me, that's the positive thing of the change coming next year, because with the playoffs going down to the top 70, instead of the top 125, and everybody else then shifting into this fall series to play for the right to have a card for the following year on the PGA Tour and some kind of priority status, that gives real meaning to this series of events. Now, if you're a player and a sponsor, they've always had meaning. But from a fan standpoint, it's a little harder to get invested simply because the biggest names show up on a very piecemeal basis in the fall. We're still going to see the big names playing elsewhere in the fall, but the actual events that we're going to see domestically in the United States, and the number of them has not yet been determined, probably at least six, are going to have real meaning and real teeth for these guys, because it's determining whether or not they've got a job the next year.
Yeah. When I look at it, sorry to interrupt, Anna, but Eamonn's got a point. It's been lost a little bit in having a place. I think when I look back on it and I remember the last 9 years that we've experienced it, it was nice. You had these nice stories of players that weren't necessarily the top names that were able to get their win. And it truly did pay off long term. And there was a stat that was running for quite some time that anybody that won in the fall season was almost guaranteed, or it had a really high probability of making it into Eastlake. That's not really come out to be true over the last several years. And so I think it's nice that they're going to kind of re-identify what that part of the season's going to mean for the PGA Tour, because I feel like it's been a little bit lost. And I know a lot of it has to viewers maybe turning the channel to some football playoffs, but I think for the PGA Tour players, it'll be more meaningful, or serve a more meaningful purpose in the way that they intend it to moving forward.
Well, that's it. It does come sort of head-to-head in terms of weekend viewing with, you know, NFL, college football, baseball playoffs, start the NBA season. It's in a bit of a sort of a wasteland when it comes to TV viewership. And I totally get it. It's hard to kind of build up the buzz for the start of the PGA Tour season when we're just 2 weeks off the FedEx Cup and these fields aren't going to be that strong. And January is sort of always where you put your marker for the big guys showing up. So it will be nice to kind of shake it up a little bit.
It will, and let's not overlook the return of Q School, because I'm sure Paige has this experience as well. When you talk to veterans who've been around this game a long time and you ask them about their Q School experiences, doesn't matter how many years have passed, they're still traumatized by what they went through at that point. And I would like to suggest to Jay Monahan that they actually give all of the players at Q School a whoop so we can read heart rates and everything else during the course of that week. Because if you're not playing, it's wonderful theater. It's traumatizing if you are playing in it for those guys. But that's another element that's going to be added to the fall starting next year. And I think it's one of the strongest.
There's no place.
I could not agree more. Sorry to jump in again. I'm so excited about Q School as a viewer, not as a participant, because it does. It creates so much drama for players. As a viewer, when it was on televised, I so vividly remember one moment where Matt Hendricks was on the final hole. He had to get up and down. His eyes were this big when he was chipping, and you lived it with him. Like, it was such compelling golf to watch because you knew what it meant. You knew how what a fine line it was to get your card or not get your card. And plus, I'm excited because it more quickly gets the best players onto the PGA Tour. I'm a huge fan of this coming up. I think that was a great point, Eamon.
Yes, there is nothing more stressful than playing for your livelihood, and Q School does exactly that. So, hey, things are going to be different in the full season coming up, but we're looking forward to it. And still to come here on Golf Today, the LPGA Tour heads to Portland this week, where Jin Young Ko is your defending champion. However, the world number one won't be teeing it up anytime soon. We've got the details on the other side of the break. This week, the LPGA Tour is in Oregon for the Portland Classic. Jin Young Ko will not return to defend her title. According to Beth Ann Nichols, the LPGA has confirmed with Ko's manager that the world number one will be sitting out the next few weeks under medical advisement for an overworked wrist. She hopes to return at the BMW Ladies Championship in late October. So with more, we welcome in Golf Channel's very own Karen Stuffel. Karen, always so good to see you, but tell us, what is your reaction to this news of Jin Young Ko?
Well, obviously, I'm a little sad for her because she's a competitor. She's the world number one, and I think she wants to go ahead to Portland and defend her title. That being said, I do feel like she's been fighting wrist issues from last year. I go back to the CME Group Tour Championship, where she was only able to practice just her short game, just to prepare for the tournament. So this has been an ongoing thing for her. She's missed the last two cuts of the tournaments that she has played in, at the AIG Women's Open and then in Canada. Hasn't played these last 2 weeks either. So I feel like this is a good thing for her to take off, to rest and recover, and to allow her wrist time to heal. But we haven't seen the best of Jin Young Ko for certainly the second half of the season. And I have to think that it's down to some pain in her wrist. So this is a good move for her. Obviously, we're disappointed that she won't be there this week.
Karen, do you think this opens the door for other players like Anneli Korda or Minji Lee to take over the number one spot in the Rolex rankings?
I do. Everything's very tight and very close anyway. And you have Nelly Korda, who has obviously coming off of her own injury issues, but has been playing really well and been sort of putting herself into some decent positions. And Minji Lee, I mean, she's been a really great player all this season long, so would probably deserve a chance at that number one spot. I know it's both of their goals. And when you think about Nelly Korda and Jin Young Ko, they've been back and forth with that number one position quite a bit anyway. So I fully expect one of those two to take advantage of these next few weeks that they have playing when Jin Young Ko is not around.
Yeah, golf isn't quite the same without the world number one, Jin Young Ko, so we wish her a speedy recovery. Well, Karen, whilst we've got you, let's get a check on this date in history because it's a bit of a special one. Back in 1949, the Ladies Professional Golf Association was officially formed at a meeting in New York City with Patty Berg elected as the tour's first president. Patty was one of 13 driven and courageous founders who had to do it all in the tour's early years, from organising tournaments to setting up the courses and so much more. I mean, they have come so far. Karen, tell us, what makes you so proud of this tour and where it is at today?
Well, I mean, it's just amazing for me, Anna, when I think back at what those founders had to do at the very beginning. You think about them, you know, obviously driving from tournament to tournament. They would set up their own courses. They would officiate their own events. And really, they had to drum up support and do their own marketing as well. So they did everything along the way. But what makes me the most proud of where the tour is now is the growth that it has given women's golf across the globe. The LPGA took a tournament to Thailand, and all of a sudden, we see a huge boom in Thai players coming out and playing on the LPGA. The LPGA Girls Golf is going great guns in terms of giving young girls an opportunity to play golf. And I think golf is one of those sports that you can play for a lifetime. There are career opportunities within the golf industry for women. And I think it's a nice thing to do a career path-wise for them. So I'm most proud of what they've done with growing women's golf across the globe and being role models for those young players.
Karen, as we're seeing with the PGA Tour these days, even established organizations kind of need to reinvent themselves and improve over time. When you look at the LPGA Tour, what do you see that needs the most improvement, or where is the most headroom for growth?
Oh, I have a few soapboxes like that I love to stand on with this regard. One of them we saw come to fruition last week. That was the feature group coverage, which I think is a huge step in making women's golf available from the time they tee off to the time they finish. You can tune in, you can watch some groups, you can watch them play. I really like that. I think that's important moving forward. I would also love to see some shot tracking, you know, more statistics, because it's one thing to tell the story of a player, but it's a whole, and their history and how they got into the game and all the rest of it. But it's a whole different ball game if you can put it in context of competition and the statistics and numbers that add up to make it such a priority. I mean, we've seen it with the PGA Tour. There are so many statistics and numbers that enable you to really tell how a player is doing week in, week out, and what gives them a good chance to win or not. And I think that's a big part of the picture of storytelling when it comes to competition golf. And then the other one I'd really like to see happen is the LPGA have a strategic alliance with the PGA Tour. And I would really love to see a mixed event. And I know I'm not the only one that's going to ask for this, because I really feel like this would be a big step for the LPGA and women's golf in general to have the same stage as the men and to see everybody come together in that fashion.
Karen, I mean, you make so many good points on how you can grow the game. And there's, without a doubt, the women's game is going from strength to strength. You just have to watch the product now. And it's just so compelling. And there is so much talent. But if you had your sort of boldest vision for the future of the women's game, I mean, what would that look like to you?
Well, I think when you look at women's sport, I think we can look at, obviously, the LPGA is a fabulous organisation. But I think we look at women's tennis as a great one. We've just had the women's US Open tennis, and they play for equal purses, the men and the women at the majors. And my bold prediction would be that we'll see that in the future for the women's majors too. You'll see equal purses, and I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing them on the same stage as well. That would be kind of cool.
Karen, we've had 21 different winners on the LPGA Tour this year. We had this conversation with Bethan Nichols yesterday. Is that kind of parity a plus or a negative for the PGA or the LPGA Tour, given that, you know, people love rivalries and people in a way love dominant players? It does show the depth of talent that's out there, but would the tour benefit more from having what we had at this time last year with Nelly Korda and Jin Young Ko trading punches every week?
Well, that's an interesting question. I obviously, you know, players that win, they have to start somewhere. So you have to have a first-time winner at some point in order to build up to those kind of rivalries. I do think that golf and sport in general, it's nice to have an underdog story, but I think people always root for your favourites. They always root for the players that are number one, number two in the world to go ahead and win, because it seems to be comfortable for people to do that. They like to see people achieve, and they like to see people achieve on a consistent basis. I think this is a bit of a growing phase right now that the LPGA Tour is facing. And, you know, it would be great to see somebody come through and be really dominant. But in order to do that, you have to start somewhere with your first win. So maybe one of these first-time wins is going to be that next player.
Yeah, the LPGA Tour certainly is not lacking storylines at the moment. Karen, thank you so much. Always such an important voice in the women's game. And great to hear your thoughts on this special day for the LPGA.
Thank you so much, Anna and Eamon.
All right, well, let's just go back, shall we, and take a little look through just how far the LPGA Tour has come since its founding in 1949. In 1958, Patty Berg won last of her record 15 women's major titles. In 85, Kathy Whitworth earned her last of record 88 LPGA Tour wins. Then in 2008, Annika Sorenstam retired with over $22 million made in her career with prize money, then a record for any female athlete, by the way, at the time. And then this year, we saw the US Women's Open feature a record $10 million purse. So it has been so fun to watch, Paige, as we bring back in Paige McKenzie, the growth of the women's game, especially in recent years with the venues and the prize purses just getting bigger and better year in, year out. But how do you reflect on the journey of the LPGA to this point?
I mean, it's amazing. And I know we've looked back as far as the founding of this LPGA Tour, but I look back at just when I played, which I don't feel like was that long ago, but I played right when the financial crisis hit. And for the LPGA Tour, they were in a very precarious position. They don't own their events. They basically lease out the name to tournament owners. And that left them with a huge void when tournament owners couldn't find tournament sponsors to pony up. And what the LPGA did in 2011, which I think was pretty extraordinary at the time, is they put on the Founders Cup without a purse. and we all played for nothing, effectively a stipend. And that's what we had to do. And it kind of ties back to what the founders did. You just had to do it in order to make it work. And now I look at where we are now. And again, that didn't feel that long ago. We're talking 11 years ago in that very first Founders Cup for no purse. 11 years later, you've got a US Open worth $10 million. You've got most of the purses on the LPGA Tour, $2 million. And it's extraordinary to see the kind of value that tournament sponsors have put into the players and into the LPGA Tour, and also just to see the health and how the LPGA has rebounded and put themselves in a position to be able to sustain if there is other difficult economic times. So I'm looking at it from a business perspective, and it's pretty extraordinary to see what the LPGA has done. It's also extraordinary to see what these women are playing for now. It's pretty awesome.
It's life-changing stuff for some of these women. Just to make the cut at the US Women's Open was just a huge life-changing moment for so many women on the LPGA Tour. And I completely echo what Karen Stupple said in terms of growing the game. It does feel like there is still a huge, huge opportunity to bring the top men and the top women together on a more regular basis on the world's biggest stages. You know, there are so many LPGA players out there who are still trying to kind of make their names become household names. And to be able to do that alongside some of the biggest men's players in the world could be such a great entertaining way, whether it's a skills competition or team events. You know, we recently just saw Lynn Grant, who was an absolute breakout star from college. She won the Henrik and Annika Scandinavian, the first woman to win on the DP World Tour. And she absolutely smashed the field, by the way. She won, absolutely crushed the men, winning by about 15 strokes, I think, which was such a fun moment to see. But Karen mentioned it, you see it with the US Open tennis, you see it with the Grand Slams in the tennis, the women and the men playing on the same platform. And that is partly why why women's tennis does get the eyeballs, because it's on the same platform as the men. And so it feels like there's a big opportunity there, and I'd love to see it.
And I think what's important about the Lynn Grant victory in particular and using that platform in that way is that so often we've seen men and women play together in a hit-and-giggle format. There isn't a competitiveness, seriousness to it. Like, you know, the old Wendy's three-tour challenge. It was kind of light and breezy golf. Seeing them at their competitive best and measured against each other in so many ways, obviously different yardage, but on the same golf course at the same time under the same tournament conditions, I think it bodes really well for the LPGA Tour. And that's one of the things I'd love to see as a next development. And it's already underway with the KPMG Performance Insights, is the idea of having the depth of shot link data for women's golf as we currently have for men's golf, because we're forced so often and talk about the LPGA Tour to rely on what is anecdotal. Whereas in the men's game, you have scientific statistical evidence of someone's performance. It's not just gossip picked up on the range. You can see how somebody performs. And I think the women's game has been historically underserved by not having that depth of data out there just to prove how good the competition actually is.
Yeah, it's very difficult to compare across generations. It's very difficult to compare across courses or tours, but it would certainly be a start. When I look at the LPGA Tour, the leader of greens in regulation year in, year out is close to 78%. It's been up to 79% a couple times over the last decade. And you look at the PGA Tour and the leader is closer to 72%. Yet the LPGA Tour players are hitting longer clubs in. Yes, I know it's a different yardage, but it would be nice to be able to even that score and be able to compare from 150 yards. What's the proximity? It doesn't matter if the LPGA is hitting 7-iron and the guys are hitting a 9-iron. You want to know that information. So certainly the quality and depth of information is needed in order to fully appreciate what the LPGA Tour players are doing. But I would also like to put out another one of those mixed team event ideas. And this is not an original thought. I was talking to Shane Bacon about this a couple of weeks ago. And that is doing something like the President's Cup, but with both men and women competing on the same teams. You have incredible depth in Korea and from the Asian countries on the women's side that might even the score a little bit and make it more competitive if you were able to combine the men and women from an international perspective versus the men and women from the United States. I think it would be incredibly exciting. I think you'd bring new fans to the women's game because there's a thread. There is a passion for playing for your country, and it doesn't matter if you're male or female. And that's why the Olympics are so popular to watch, is because it's about the sport. It's not about who's playing, and it's having this common bond amongst fans. So I'm looking at it thinking that would be an incredible opportunity. And like Eamon said, it's not a hit and giggle. It's truly one of the most competitive events of the year. So just throwing it out there. Again, not my original idea, but I love the idea.
It's a great point, Paige. I mean, the beauty of golf, it has sort of got, it's got scope to experiment with different formats, different types of competitions, and mixing the men and women can only be a good thing. So, you know, the future, there's a lot of potential there.
But if we were doing that for the President's Cup this year, it would be evidence that Trevor Immelman just can't catch a break if Jin Young Ko drops out with a wrist injury the week before.
No, he's had enough bad news so far this year. Let's not plant that idea as well. Okay, we'll stay with us because we had more news today from the LPGA Tour. And the Pelican Women's Championship announced that Annika Sorenstam will become tournament host for Tampa Bay's signature LPGA Tour event beginning in 2023. In collaboration with the LPGA Tour tournament partners, Gainbridge and Pelican Golf Club, the Annika, driven by Gainbridge at Pelican, will take place in November 2023 as the penultimate event of the LPGA Tour season. Well, we've got a big show coming up tomorrow. Fresh off his victory at the BMW PGA Championship, Shane Lowry will be joining us. And we've got another Irishman stopping by. Padraig Harrington joins us off his third career PGA Tour Champions victory. And Golf Today starts at noon Eastern alongside Eamon. That is the Irish trio of dreams. I don't know what you guys think. Well, next week as well is going to be a big week. Quail Hollow Club in Charlotte, North Carolina will be the host site for the 2022 President's Cup between the US and international sides. Now, this is pretty funny. If we flash back to 2013, the President's Cup, when U.S. Captain Davis Love III began feeding a squirrel that he found off the second hole. The squirrel, who would become known as Sammy the Squirrel, would serve as the unofficial mascot for the U.S. team that year. Oh, love comes in all shapes and sizes, doesn't it? Well, today is National Defy Superstition Day. What is your golf superstition? The best responses we are seeing here on the show. So, Eamon Lynch, take it away. What do we got?
The first one we have here from Paul Stoddard. I always have tees in my right pocket and ball marker and divot repair tool in the left. If not in that order, I play poorly. Sure, Paul, that's the reason why.
Paul Stoddard, you've cracked it. That's the reason. Thomas Bell says, I never play a golf ball with a number three on it. No three putts.
There are good threes in golf. You know, there's a par three, there's an eagle three.
Yeah, with four putts there as well. That's not the direction you want to go.
And the last one we have from Giorgio. Don't keep your found balls in the same bag pocket as your good balls. If they touch the bad juju from the found ball, will get on your good balls. But you have to find balls first, Giorgio.
What if, you know, what if the found ball is a... For, you know, what if it's your best ball in your bag, is, which is often I find. I find the best ball in my bag.
I don't even look for them anymore, Anna. I see them sailing in a certain direction and my interest ends at that point.
Paige, golf has a very strange way of bringing out some slightly strange superstitions. Has this ever played a part in your career?
Oh, 100%. 100%. I never used to play with a found tee unless it was a broken tee, and that was okay on par threes. Because I didn't, same idea, didn't want the bad juju to rub off on my golf, which, again, there's no logic to this. Also, never played a tournament with a four, like a golf ball with a number four on it. That was my practice round day golf ball.
Why?
I don't know why, because I somehow thought that was going to affect my golf game. I do not know.
It's a horribly mental game, golf. It will bring out your less best features, I'd say, including weird superstitions. Have you got any?
Do you really think I have any room left in this head for any superstitious mumbo-jumbo? I've got so many crippling swing thoughts at this point. I don't have room for superstitions anymore. No, definitely not.
I mean, it's not a superstition.
Maybe you need it.
Maybe you need it. Because right now your superstition is if I go to the golf course, then I'm going to be terrible at golf. Maybe you just need to go to the range.
Somewhere out there, sports psychologists are watching the two of you sending me down this very dark road and thinking that is the last thing I need is to add more of this.
I don't think I have any superstitions. One thing I do is I bring lots of snacks on the golf course, and I am the queen of leaving a banana in your bag, or, you know, coming in the off season, coming back to a new season, getting out to the golf course and it's gone black. You know, I know I'm not the only person to have done that. I know it's gross, but there's all sorts of. Did you ever keep weird things in your bag, Paige?
I mean, I did find a peanut butter and jelly like 2 months after the off season ended, and that was. I mean, you'd actually be surprised at how well preserved it is in a Ziploc bag. But we've all fallen victim to leaving the snacks in the bag. I don't know what that has to do with superstitions, but.
No, you put your mind in the rookies who are starting their PGA Tour season this week, and you think, what kind of superstitions will they be bringing onto the course? Any just shred of luck that's going to get them off to a good start? It's got to be a very nerve-wracking week for some of these guys, just making their cut for the first time.
And if something works, that's their superstition starting next week. You know, that's the thing about superstitions. They're interchangeable all the time. Just one goes out of fashion, a new one comes in.
Yes. Well, not only is it superstitions, by the way, it's also Thank a Golf Course Superintendent Day. So you can always go onto Twitter with the GCSA and put a little tweet out with the hashtag ThankASuper, because that's the kind of feel-good things that we like to do here on Golf Today. Well, what a show it has been. Thank you so much for spending your afternoon with us. We will see you tomorrow. Have a wonderful day. Take care.